Welcome to the second course of wrestling with faith. I know this week no one wrestled with any faith of what happened on Saturday. Everyone understood it well and had no questions on God. And everyone walked out with such enthusiasm. But wrestling with faith is a big wrestle. It's not easy. You know, we didn't dream last week that we had a big wrestling this Shabbos, you know. We didn't think this will happen. And we thought, you know, Kristallnacht was 80 years ago. Last week was the anniversary of Kristallnacht, when they banged out every single shul and stores that were owned by Jews and killed many in that night. And that was 80 years ago, exactly. 3 days later, in U.S. soil, freedom, which U.S. is a country of peace, a country of law, a country of justice. It tries to follow the law of God, and yet such a thing happens in a shul on Shabbos morning, when people came to do their regular connecting to Hashem. They didn't come to watch McDonald's or what's the famous Yiddish Fiddle on the Roof. They came to that. So why did this happen? Anyone could answer the question?
Yes.
She has the answer. Look at that.
I don't have the answer now. I really feel, excuse me, I just have something in my mouth, but that the climate in this country promotes that kind of action. I think there's been a lot of hostility, angst, anger, very negative feelings running throughout this country. I've never seen it quite like this. And when you have that kind of an environment, people that are just on the edge, it will light them up to do things like that, unfortunately. Whether it's black school children in the South, or it's people that get angry and hostile will do things like that, unfortunately. And we have to protect ourselves.
But it's always white men, you know, white supremacists.
It's always?
No, I mean, that's the big movement now, white supremacy.
Oh,
so you're not finding somebody from Costa Rica or El Salvador who's immigrant.
Well, they don't live here.
They don't live here.
The immigrants that I happen to work with to help, you know. Making in this country, they're not doing anything bad. They're just trying to get by.
Hopefully, yeah.
And then you find these.
Okay, let's.
There's a large group process that goes on. It's bigger than any one of us by ourselves. And people will behave differently when they're in a mob than they will when they're standing there by themselves.
Yeah, that's true.
But this wasn't a mob.
This was
guys,
one,
it's
no?
It's a loners.
Okay, so today's topic is going to be an interesting topic, and the conclusion will cover and answer at least what we don't know, is the concept of truthfully from two perspectives, from intellectual and emotional. When you look at Judaism, many people say to me, you know, I'm happy to be Jewish, as long as there's no strings attached. I said, what do you mean by strings attached?
I like to observe Shabbos.
Well, for me, cholent on Shabbos is great. Yeah, who doesn't want cholent on Shabbos? But but if there's anything more than that, you know, I have to do this, I have to do that, that's strings attached. Give me some Judaism that's easy. It doesn't change my routine in life. It doesn't disturb any ways I'm doing till now. You know, just let it be. Hey, come up front over here. Too far, you're too far. It's hard to see. Over here, there's some extra chairs. So, this is something we'll discuss tonight. One thing. Does God need our mitzvahs? So let's take an example. Let's say Friday night you light candles. Let's just take an example. does God really need those candles? Or could God survive without those candles?
But I need.
Of course. We need the light.
So did God create you for you? Or did he create you for him? Is there anything that God gains by you doing anything good?
Yeah.
Or is it all for you to gain the good that you do for good? Meaning, am I going to live here 120 years? And after 120 years, all the good I do is going to be good for me? Or the 120 years good that I do is good for God? Does God need us?
That's a good question.
That's a very strong question. And even, huh?
Do we believe in, like, when, I'm not really sure about this, there's an expression to meet your maker, and I don't know if that's Christian.
God, you mean, like God, to meet God.
So when you die,
your soul leaves the body.
And meets God.
I mean, you can meet God here, meaning you don't have to leave this world to meet God, because God is also here. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like you have to go somewhere, because God is everywhere. It's like we learn, you know, if we believe really in God, it's like there's nowhere he's not. So I don't have to really go. It just means that when I leave the body, I'm no more confined to the limitations of body, so I can connect to a higher realm of reality, and I see different levels of reality, you know, like it's a whole different thing.
But I think that if you do the mitzvot, it gives you the option to connect to God while you're alive. Your soul is connecting to God before it even goes to the next world.
So you mean, so you're saying the mitzvot gives you the opportunity to become one with God. So she's saying an interesting thing. She says, doing a mitzvah, you connect to God, but my only question is, does God gain anything by you being connecting to him? Does it give God anything?
I think that it's more for us as human beings.
For us, rather.
To have the knowledge that God exists and to connect to God more than God needs us to do it. It's
more for us to connect.
But it's probably fulfilling for God to know that you are connecting.
So God gains by us being connected, because he feels good that you feel the opportunity to be connected.
Right.
Like she's giving an example. I'm not saying, I'm just saying she's an example, let's say a parent. So God, let's say, is your parent. And your parent enjoys when the child, behaves. I'm saying it gives a little nachas, you know, you get a little nachas when your child calls you and says, you know, ma, ta, I did something good today. What did you do good? I didn't eat any cake today. Oh, thank you so much. It's so nice. You're really keeping me up. I'm just giving an example. So she's expressing that when we do a mitzvah and we connect to God, that gives God fulfillment that we are fulfilled. Am I right?
They always say that God's love is unconditional. It's like you said, a parent to a child. You love your children unconditional love. So when you as far as God goes, whatever you do, I think that whether you're good or bad, or, you know, I mean, God will love you no matter what. But it's you gaining the connection.
So the good is you're gaining the connection, and if you're not good, you don't have the connection, but for God it doesn't make a difference.
Right.
So she's saying that for God there's no difference if you're good or bad, but for you, if you're good, you're connected, and if you're not good, you're disconnected, so for you it's a problem. But for God, whether you do good or bad, what does it make a difference? God is above it. So if he's above it, what's the difference if you're good or bad? Yeah?
I try to do good things.
Why?
Because my mother told me to. I mean, that's how I...
Okay. That's a good reason.
No, I mean, that's how I was raised. And my mother said her mother was like that, and that we should try to help people. So less fortunate than ourselves. So that's what I try to do. I'm assuming that's a mitzvah. But so I do that. I try to help people. But I don't feel that that connects me to God in any way.
Okay, good. So we're going to read in text 1 and 2. This is called the intellectual reason why what you do or don't do doesn't make a difference to God. So text 1. is a you have page page 32?
Yeah.
In your copies, it's you have it.
Yes.
So in page if we see page 32, text 1. So this is a verse in Tehillim, chapter 88, and it says like this, yeah?
When I observe your heavens, the work of your fingers, and the moon and stars that you set in place, I wonder, what is man that you should be mindful of him? What is a human that you should recall him?
So King David is saying, like, who are we? We're not even a cockroach compared to God. We're not even an ant compared to God. We're not even a bacteria compared to God. I mean, we're nothing. So what we do, what we don't do, God, us compared to God is like so insignificant. It's so meaningless. So who are you compared to God? You're nothing. I mean, you're really nothing. It's not like nothing that you should feel nothing. Compared to God, you are so insignificant that it's nothing to mention to God. It doesn't give him anything. And then it says even more than that. It says Job, as you know, Job, he hath so much challenges in his life. All his kids died, all his money was gone. I mean, everything that could go wrong went wrong in one zoom, like when it rains, it pours. So he said this expression, which is true, in text 2. Say, If you sin,
how do you affect him? If your transgressions are many, what do you do to him? If you are righteous, what do you give to him? What does he take from your hand? Your wickedness only affects a human like yourself, and your righteousness only affects people.
Clear? So that when you do something right, the only thing I could affect is the person. So, but God, if I do something right, it doesn't give him anything. And if I do something wrong, it doesn't hurt him. It means nothing. So from the biblical perspective, we're nothing compared to God and our actions mean nothing. So now the question is, why do I have to do anything good?
Right.
I'm serious, a serious question. Now, let's go to this is the intellectual, this is, by the way, written in Torah. We're nothing and our actions mean nothing. You sin or you don't sin, for God, it doesn't do any change. God is still the same God, nothing has changed. Then the emotional part is the famous story with when God, on text 3, when God wanted to give the Torah to the Jewish people, he first went to a few other nations and said, would you like it? And it was so funny how they answered. They didn't really reject it, but they first asked, God, could you share with us something about it? Like, what does it say? And each one had a problem with one of the things, and they said, it's not for us. When it came to the Jews, they said, how much is it? He says, for free. We'll take two. So God gave them two. Two tablets. For free, why not? You know, I know my father is a Mohel, thank God, and he did thousands of circumcisions. But one of his expertise is doing adults. Because from Russia, when the Jews came out of Russia, they didn't do circumcisions. So he's talking about 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds. His oldest was like 85. So anyway, so first you have to convince the person to want to do it, you know. He's already 30, 40 years old. It's a whole surgery. Anyway, so one time one of the Russians asks, okay, so how much are you going to charge me? Because it's stitches and it's, you know, it's all. So they said it was really for free. They didn't charge because they had organizations that used to. So the Russians said, oh, so free, so let me do it too. My father says, you don't want to. You don't want two bristles. One is enough. Okay. That's just a joke. Don't take me serious. There was one that didn't want any anesthesia. He wanted to do it like Abraham did it. When Abraham was 99, he did a circumcision. He didn't have anesthesia. So imagine you're 99 years old. you never did, no one ever did a circumcision. You have to do it on yourself because no one, there was no mohel. So he did it on himself without, on himself.
And he lived.
And he lived until 175, only 76 years more after the circumcision. It's not a lot. 175. So the question is, how did he do it?
How
did
he do it
in this school? Oh, wait. You want, I should tell you what Avram did. Anyways, so when Avram was taking the knife to do the bris, he said, God, I'm a 99. I'm doing that on my own. I don't have any doctor to do the stitch, nothing. Like, could you help me here? God says, okay, I'll help you. And God helped him do the bris. V'choloys imo habrit. He did it together. So he had a good moel. God. That's the best moel you could have. So let's read the conversation that God had with three other nations, and then the Jews, and then you'll see the emotional part of the Torah. Say, before?
Before God revealed himself to the Jews and gave them the Torah, he revealed himself and offered the Torah to all the other nations. First he approached the children of Esau and offered them the Torah. What is written in it, they asked. God responded, do not murder. Master of the world, they retorted. Our father Esau is a murderer, as it is stated. The hands are the hands of Esau. In fact, his father Isaac assured him, you will live by your sword. Next, God approached the children of Ammon and Moab and offered them the Torah. What is written in it, they asked. God responded, do not commit adultery. Master of the world, they retorted. Our very existence is due to an illicit relationship. As it is stated, the two daughters of Lot became pregnant from their father, and they gave birth to Ammon and Moab. God continued and encountered the children of Ishmael and offered them the Torah. What is written in it, they asked God. God responded, do not steal. Master of the world, they retorted. Our father Ishmael was a bandit, as it is stated. He will be a wild man. He will fight everyone, and everyone will fight him. In a similar fashion, God approached every nation and offered the Torah, and every nation found reason to refuse it.
So from all the answers they gave, you could see it on the PowerPoint also, what was the common theme why they refused the Torah? Like, what was the common theme here?
What was it at first?
It went against their convenience. Meaning, the first guy says, do not kill. I need a kill. That's how I live. My life is killing. So if that's what Torah demands of me, it ruins my lifestyle. The next one says, adultery. My whole birth was from adultery when Lot lived with his daughters and got pregnant. So how could I not have adultery in my nation? It's not for me. So it has nothing to do with intellectual, with God or not. It's just I don't want to be disturbed my lifestyle. I have a certain lifestyle. And then the third one says stealing. Well, how could I live if I don't steal? You know, it's not. What did the Jews say? Nasa v'nisha. What does Nasa v'nisha mean? We'll do and then we'll ask. Meaning, they didn't look at if it's convenient or not. They didn't even want to, they didn't care what it says. If God gives it to us, I'm going to do it no matter how inconvenient it is. So now I'm going to pose the question to all of you. How do you motivate yourself, or what motivates you to do something that's inconvenient and you do it anyway? What would motivate you to do something that's inconvenient for you and you do it anyway?
Depends on the circumstances.
The right thing to do.
So, I'll give you a few examples. Let's go to page 36. 37. There's one thing that motivates people. It's called a nice paycheck, for example.
Reward.
How many people really want to go to work here? Oh, doctor, okay. You really want to go to work? You love your job? Tell us the truth. Come on already. You love your job?
I don't like staying home. Uh-huh.
Okay. That's not the right answer.
Okay. So, let me just say, this is a very serious thing. If I have a compensation, that will motivate me sometimes to do things I don't want to do. Like, I don't want to work every day from 9 to 5. But I'm getting paid, and there's a compensation. So there's a motivation that I'm going to do something even if I'm not comfortable. It's like someone says, listen, I don't like my job. I don't like my employer. But I'm getting paid. I'm quiet. I do my job. And that's it.
And you have your family to take care of.
You know what I'm saying? So so the motivation here is, even if I'm not comfortable and I don't like it, I'll do it anyway. Why? Because I need the compensation. So it's, you know, it's a, so that's one motivation. Let's go to the second motivation on page 37, is fear. Fear could be, I lose my job, or I'll be homeless, right? I won't have what to pay, so I want to work, you know? So I'm afraid not to have a home. I'm afraid not to bring food for my family and children. I'm afraid that, you know, if I don't bring a nice paycheck, I'll be divorced in a few days and so on. And all that, you know, you understand. So fear is also motivation, that you do things that are uncomfortable and not routine and not what your lifestyle, but you do it because you're afraid of an outcome. A third thing that could happen is called results. I'll give you an example. Let's take teeth. Why do you brush your teeth every day? Is anyone going to pay you for brushing your teeth? No. Are you going to get punished for brushing your teeth? No, but if you don't brush your teeth, it's going to decay, and it's going to be cavities and whatever. So you're doing it. In other words, what motivates you, even though you're lazy and you're not interested in brushing and flossing and all the things that you have to do for your tooth? You do it because you know that it could be a consequence that's not good for you. In other words, so that's another thing. The last thing, the other thing, it could be a relationship. That's already a higher thing, a higher level. Like, for example, I take care of my parents. Why am I taking care of my parents? Because they're going to give me a paycheck? No. I take care of my parents because I'm afraid that if I don't? No. I take care of my parents because I have a pleasure of my parents. I have a relationship with them, and it I feel good because it's my parents. It's like I just feel good doing it because they're my parents. That's it. Now it can be uncomfortable because I have to go in the morning before work, and then I have to meet them after. You know, like sometimes when parents are older, you're running back and forth, but that doesn't matter. Because this is a relationship. This is my parents. This is my child. This is my spouse. So building a relationship between two people or people that have a relationship, they'll do things that are uncomfortable because of the relationship, not because of a consequence or fear or a compensation. The last thing is, which is called making a change. Like a lot of times you volunteer, and you do, Meals on Wheels, visit the sick, whatever you do. Why? You have no connection to them. It's not a parent, it's not a brother, but you want to feel you're making a change in the world. You're doing something that's effective. So what do? I do all this work, and it takes a lot of my time, but I feel good because I'm doing something effective, even though it's not what I'm used to. It's, you know, I don't like to go to the hospital and visit every guy there, you know. But I do it because I know I'm making a change. There's a famous W. You want to put on the video? There's a famous story. This is, by the way, a true story of a guy in jail in Siberia. They gave him. Is that the story with the? Oh yeah, let's let them see it. The idea of. It's people who love to work hard, and they'll do very hard labor as long as they know they're making a change, and they're affecting. If they're working, and there's no effect and there's no outcome, they're not going to want to work. A person wants to feel that what they do, there's an actual change happening. Yeah.
Clouds of dust rose behind the wheels of a wealthy baron's horse-drawn carriage. Halt, he cried to his coachman, as a field of golden shoulder-high wheat came into view. In the field, a muscular young man grasped a long scythe with both hands. Again and again, the farmhand brought the metal tool down in a sweeping motion, deftly harvesting the waving wall of grain. The baron was mesmerized. "What graceful movements!" he exclaimed. "How calming to watch!" The baron approached the farmhand. "I'll double your pay if you come to work for me," he offered. The young man wiped his forehead. "All right," he replied at last. "4 ruble a day." "Done," clapped the baron, and he opened his carriage door for the farmhand to hop aboard. Minutes later, they arrived at an enormous mansion. The baron ushered his new employee into a lavishly furnished lounge. Sinking into a cushioned recliner, the baron ordered the young man to get to work with his scythe. "But where's the wheat?" he gasped in astonishment. "It's not about the wheat," replied the baron. "It's about the movements. Imagine that you are standing in a field filled with tall grain. Swing your scythe as gracefully as you did in the field." With a bewildered shrug, the farmhand got to work. He raised and lowered his scythe with a rhythm that enchanted his new boss. It was far easier than harvesting real wheat, but after half an hour, the young man set down his tool. "Don't stop," cried the baron. "You have wonderful rhythm. I'll triple your pay if need be." Again, the worker silently attacked the stalks of imaginary grain. On and on he swung that scythe, but after an hour, he let it drop with a jarring clang. "I'm going back to my old job," he cried in exasperation. "But why?" asked the baron in amazement. "This work is far easier, and your pay is far greater." "I'd rather work a whole lot harder," snapped the farmhand, "and get pennies in return, as long as I can do something productive. Work that accomplishes nothing is sheer torture." And off he went, leaving the baron shaking his head in wonder. This parable was offered by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson. It is human nature to seek meaning in our activities. For without meaning, even if there be ample reward, even light work becomes unbearably burdensome and disheartening. Reward is simply not a valid exchange for genuine accomplishment.
Is it clear?
It's clear.
Okay, we'll get to it in a moment. So let's get to the mitzvahs. There is a famous principle in Judaism, in text 4, that the reason should motivate you to do the right thing versus the wrong thing is because reward and punishment. It's called the 11th principle, not chapter 11, but it's 11th principle of Judaism. There's 13 principles of Judaism. The 11th principle of Judaism, which is called the fundamental faith of Judaism, is that God rewards anyone that does what God wants, and he punishes the ones that don't do it. So what motivates a person to do the right thing? He wants to get rewarded. And what motivates him not to do the right thing? He doesn't want to get punished. If you read text 4, let's just read it inside, and then we'll dispute it, yeah?
The 11th principle, God, blessed be he, rewards those who observe the commandments of the Torah and punishes those who transgress its prohibitions. The greatest reward is to experience the pleasures of the world to come. The greatest punishment is to be cut off from the world to come.
Okay, so that's could be a nice motivation. You know, I don't want to put on tefillin. I don't want to light candles. I don't want to eat kosher. But I don't want to be punished. Who wants to get punished for not lighting candles? Who wants to get punished for not putting yourself? I'm going to do it. So you could almost channel your whole life with working on this premise that you know what, if I do the right thing, I'll get paid, so I'm rewarded. And if I do the wrong thing, I get punished. So why should I get punished? Why should I not get rewarded? And that can motivate you. The only problem with this is that this motivation, it has nothing to do with God. It has to do with you. What does God gain from you? I'm telling you that if you put on tefillin and light candles, you're going to get rewarded. Okay, but what does it have to do with God? Does God gain anything from me putting on tefillin? Does God gain anything from my candles? No. According to this principle, it has nothing to do with God. You know I should do the right thing? So you get rewarded. You know you should get not do the wrong thing, so you don't get punished. So your whole motivation is all about you. But we asked in text 2, and we brought text 2, we showed you that if you do a mitzvah, you don't do a mitzvah, it doesn't change God. So we're back to the same question. Does God care, and does it make a difference in God's life? If I lit the candles, I know I'll get punished if I don't. But does God gain anything, or he loses anything, or not? Up to now, there's nothing we could see that God gains by me lighting candles or by me doing a mitzvah. So why do it?
For yourself.
For myself, I just said, but that's why you're here for yourself.
The point is that when I light candles, it makes me feel good. In other words, it's an inward kind of
thing. I agree, but the question is, is there anything that God is gaining from it?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No. In the history, when in the Tanakh, when Bnei Israel didn't go in the right way, so Hashem got very angry.
And he punished them.
Right.
But my question is, does God gain anything from me being good?
What I'm trying to say is that we see when God is happy and not happy from the Tanakh. I mean.
So what are you saying?
So
then?
I think that. If
so
all
does
of
that
us
motivate
mitzvah,
you? Does that motivate you?
This is what we're saying. No, that if all of us will keep Shabbat, Mashiach is coming. I mean.
So what motivates you to do the right thing?
Oh, this is another question.
No, is it? Are you afraid you're going to get punished?
No.
No, I was born to. This is how they raised us: that to worship Hashem. I mean,
but what motivates you to do something you don't want to do?
The motivation. This is what they taught us to do.
You do everything that the Torah tells you to do.
No, I'm not holy at all. But this is how they raised us.
But if I want to get you to do everything the Torah says to do, how do I motivate you?
About the reward. We are human beings.
You get punished and reward.
Yes.
I'll tell you an interesting story. There was a young couple. They're on the way to get married, the girl and boy. And they got into the automobile accident and they died. You know, the couple. So they came to heaven. And they asked the angel, could we get married in heaven? Because we were on the way to our wedding, and we died. Can we get married in heaven? So the angel said, listen, I'll find out. Wait in the waiting room, you know, and I'll find out. They wait a day, 2 days, 3 days, a week, 2 weeks, two. After 2 months, finally, the angel comes back and says, you know, I just found out we could do a wedding in heaven. I said, okay, good. We have another question. What's the other question? Can we get divorced in heaven? If we decide, if the marriage doesn't work out, is there a way out? What's like in heaven, there's no way out. You know, just don't want to know. The angel gets so upset at them. He says, listen, I had to wait 2 months till I got a rabbi to come to heaven. To find out if you could do a wedding. If you want me to find out about a divorce, I have to wait for a lawyer. And to get a lawyer in heaven, it's going to take a long time.
To get a lawyer
to heaven is going to take a long time. So, yeah.
And also, you have to believe that there's a world to come based on what this is.
Exactly.
If you don't believe,
then it doesn't work. So I wanted to share with you a second approach in Jewish philosophy. By the way, a lot of Jews live with this philosophy. You do the good, you get reward. You don't do it, you're going to get punished. And I don't want to get punished. I want to get the reward. And therefore, so it's basically they're living a whole life. It has nothing to do with God. It's all about yourself, that you want to make sure you don't get punished. And you want to get reward. So that's life. But they still don't give me. So what does God gain from it? I don't know. Like, what happens if God didn't create you? Would be great. Right? God doesn't need you. So there's a second approach is a very interesting approach. It's built by the Nachmanides and Maimonides. They have a different approach. They say, you know why you should do the mitzvahs in the Torah? It makes you a better person. Listen to this, listen to this. They say, and they bring, I'll show you, very interesting, they say, and I'll show you a few examples, that by following the Torah way of life, you know, the Torah mitzvahs, you'll be a better mensch, a better character. You won't get angry. You won't be jealous. You'll be kind. I mean, this is what they say. And let's just read it, and I'll give you two examples, and then we'll show you that this is not enough either. But I'm just going through a few, a higher level, like more like, it's not just punishment and reward, but the Rambam and Nachmanides say, you want to be a good mensch? You want to be a good businessman? You want to be a good husband? You want to be a good wife? You want to be a good father? A good teacher? A good president? A good lawyer? Follow the Torah. You understand what I'm saying? They basically say, it makes you a better person. Where does it say that? Text 5a and 5b.
Each of the 613 commandments either conveys an admirable idea or rejects a repugnant idea. Either is a principle of justice or wards off an injustice. Either endows a noble character trait or cautions against a negative trait. The mitzvot were given solely to refine human beings. The mitzvot are not intended to benefit God. Their purpose is to benefit humankind, to keep us from harm, shield us from negative beliefs and base character traits, remind us of the miracles and wonders of the Creator, and to help us know God. The Midrash says that mitzvot refine human beings, similar to the process of refining silver. Just as silver is refined to remove all impurities, so too mitzvot cleanse our hearts of improper beliefs, make us cognizant of the truth, and help us be constantly aware of God.
There's, by the way, a new philosophy just revealed like 2-3 years ago, and they use it in psychology a lot now, and the Torah said this 3,500 years ago. If you want a person to change their character, let's say they're an angry personality, and you want them to, you know, change and be a calm personality, or they're a jealous person, they begrudge the other one's success. And so years ago they used to say, well, you have to go to like different schools, and they're going to teach you how to think differently, and go to therapy, and they're going to teach you how to think. Now they came out with a new thing, which Torah already said 3,500 years ago. If you want to change the way you are, you should act different. In other words, like this. So for example, I'm a stingy person. I don't like to share anything with anyone. Start sharing, and all of a sudden that character will change. So for example, take the apple and give it to someone. Take the cup and give it to, like, go share. When you start doing the action, in the philosophy of the Nachmanides, it says, ha machshava nimshach achar hapu'ulot. Your thinking and your emotion is changed according to your action. So, like, I remember there was once a couple, true story, they didn't get along, every time arguing. So the rabbi said to the guy, listen, I know you hate your wife, I know you don't want to talk to her, everything, but do me a favor, every Friday, when you come home from work, go to the store, get beautiful flowers, like such, should be the best flowers, you know, nice, fresh, everything. And come home and say these words to your wife. Good Shabbos, I love you. And give her the flowers. I know you don't mean it. I know you hate her. But just say those words. And you should, you know, just say it. So he goes, buys the flowers, huh? Robertson, I love you. She almost fainted, you know, she couldn't believe it. And as he does this every week, all of a sudden he says, you know, I really do love you. You understand what I'm saying? He started to do things that all of a sudden everything changes. Why? Because the action is what brings the change to the personality. Most of the Torah is action. That's the difference between our religion and other religions. Like Christianity, is not about action. It's more about the feeling. Love God, love all humans. It's not so much action. In Judaism, there's a lot of action. Every day you put on tefillin, you wear the tzitzis, you light the candle. It's a lot of, you know, a lot of action. You know, build a sukkah, build Hanukkah candles, build a lulav, shake the lulav, build a shofar, put on the tzitzis, put on a yarmulke, give tzedakah, daven every day. It's like you get exercise just from thinking about one mitzvah or the other. There's very few mitzvahs in the Torah that are thinking and emotional. There's only six mitzvahs that is feeling, believe in God. I love God. But the other 606 are all action. What to do, why? Because when you do the action of kindness, and you do the action of love, and you do the action of good, it changes who you are. You understand? So this is a philosophy. Yeah, say, what do you want to say?
I was going to say, it's acting as if. Acting as if you feel
exactly.
You really love someone, as in your example.
Exactly.
And the fact of taking the action, you know, this to me is interesting because you're saying it goes back 3,500 years to the Torah, and I'm learning this in another program that I'm involved with, and that's incredible to me. It's about a program being a program of action and not just sitting there and being a victim or somebody like
that. Exactly. Exactly. By the way, there's an interesting thing. Just a short thing about kosher that helps you be a better person. There's a strange law in kosher. I don't know if you know about this. That let's say you have a pot that's not kosher. It was used for chicken soup that wasn't kosher. Now you want to make it kosher. How do you make it kosher? So the Torah says, listen to this. The Torah says, you clean the pot. You know, wash it, clean it. You wait 24 hours and then you fill it up with water and boil it, and then you spill out the water. So the question is a very strange question. Think about the philosophy, how it works. What's not kosher about this pot now? You cleaned the pot already. The only thing that's not kosher is the taste that's in the metal of the pot. That's what you're trying to get out of the pot. So my question is, when I put water in and I cook it, how do I know the taste is coming out? Maybe I'm cooking the taste back in. You know what I'm saying? What am I doing? The walls of the thing is not right? The taste in the pot is not good, right? And I'm cooking it and I'm trying to get it out. But how do I know it's coming out? Maybe it's going back out and in at the same time. And the answer is a famous answer. This has to do with philosophy. When you're busy and you're in the mode of giving, you don't have time to absorb. Which means, when I'm now taking the pot and I'm busy taking the taste out, the pot doesn't have the opportunity to absorb then. Listen to this. So the same thing in philosophy. If you want a person to all of a sudden stop, how do I put it? They're complaining about the shul. You know, they don't like to come to shul. Give them a job about doing something in the shul to get people to come to shul. So they won't have time to absorb the negative. It's almost like, it's like you're getting someone to do something the opposite, and all of a sudden there's no more absorption of thinking of the non-kosher part. Because they're so busy getting people, volunteers to help, that all of a sudden, what do you mean? It's the best place in the world. So Torah and mitzvahs has so much action because it makes you a better... This is the Machmanides and Maimonides. They write that's why God gave us Torah and mitzvahs. Forget about reward and punishment. God wants you to be a good mensch. You want to be a good mensch? Follow the manual of the Torah. It's the best way to live.
Can I tell a personal story?
Yeah, let's just do text 6. Quickly, text 6, and then we get to the next thing. Yeah?
An ingenious series of experiments conducted a number of years ago showed that when people mimicked the facial expressions associated with happiness, they felt happier. Even when
could everyone laugh now? So you think it's a joke. But there is a therapy called now. It's called laugh therapy.
Yes.
There's such an organization. So is it really make you happy? Well, if you act happy, it does make you really happy. And then when you're happy, everything turns positive. Okay, go further.
Researchers have found that smiling itself produces feelings of happiness. How were they kept in the dark? Simple. They were asked to hold a pencil with their teeth. Doing so tends to activate the muscles we use when we smile, the zygomatic major. This muscle lifts the corner of the mouth obliquely upwards and laterally and produces a characteristic smiling expression. Try it now. You will smile. Now take that pencil and hold it to your lips, pointing it straight out. A different set of muscles are now activated, those that are involved in frowning. These are the ones targeted by Botox treatments. Why this clever ruse? We can't tell subjects in the study that they are supposed to be feeling happy, because that would have unintended consequences on the behavioral rating of interest. It turned out that people with a pencil in their teeth, who are unbeknownst to them activating their zygomatic muscles, rated cartoons funnier than those who held the pencils with their lips. It appears that going through the motions can trigger the emotions. Technically stated, involuntary facial movements provide sufficient peripheral information to drive emotional experience.
Okay, so basically, the motive is that the reason you want to follow Torah mitzvahs, it makes you a better person. Now, one of the things, by the way, if you ask anyone, why does the Torah tell us we must eat kosher? So you'll get three answers. One Jew, it's healthier. And God knows that if we eat kosher, it makes us healthy. Well, potato latkes.
It's not healthy.
Schnitzel, what is it? Schnitzel plus. It's not, doesn't make you healthier. Chal, depends what kind of chal. So honestly, the Torah says a very strange thing. The reason God tells us to eat kosher is to teach us, it's a very, you'll see, it's called control. Self-control. I'll give you an example. You're very hungry, and that food is smelling so good. You go into the store, you say, is it kosher? Well, we don't know, but. So if you keep kosher, that means you can't eat there, and it's, you're like starving to death already. And that taste, that cheeseburger is so great, it's like going into your nose. But, you know, and then, even more than that, even if it is kosher, well, first I have to make a blessing before. There's like a lot of the laws about kosher, you'll see, it's a lot of control. It's a lot of self-control, discipline. I remember when we traveled to Russia in 1991, then Russia didn't have as much as, you know, today, this, like, you could get to Russia, you could get everything already. It's like going to United States, you know. But then there was nothing. So what did we do? We brought from, we were there for 2 months, we brought from Brooklyn, vacuum packed some meat or some whatever. But how long could the vacuum pack last? So we lived on vegetables and some rice. And we had like 100 students there. And after like a month or two, you know, this, you got used to drinking water, rice, and some vegetables. Over there to get vegetables, then it was like looking for diamonds. I mean, it was so hard. You had to give guys chocolate and cigarettes to exchange with vegetables, the whole thing. But the people said, the people that came for a whole month, they said, how do you guys live like this? It's a discipline. It teaches you, you know, this is, you're a soldier, this is a discipline. So that itself, I think, is a lot, because like a lot of people think, well, I can eat what I want. So there's no control, and then they smoke what they want. And then they act what they want, you know. So it's also teaching us self-control. I'm just going, I don't want to get into it because it's a long discussion. Now, the problem with this is still one problem. It's all about you. So you're a better person. You're a better mensch. But what does God get from it? When you eat a kosher chalent or kosher steak, does God get anything from it?
Steak.
No, I'm serious about it. When you eat a kosher papaya or kosher challah, does God get anything from it? This, in other words, this philosophy is great. I think it's a great philosophy, Nachmanides, Amanides. But But does God gain anything? Is there something God is gaining? In other words, if you didn't exist, God forbid, would God lose that you didn't eat through your lifetime? How many pieces of gefilte fish you eat? Let's say 100,000 pieces through your lifetime? So if you didn't eat, if Rebbetzin Bettel Zalman didn't eat gefilte fish, did God lose out? Is there something that God gains that you ate gefilte fish, or God loses or not? Up till now, it's all about either punishment or reward, or being a better person. It's all about you. But we're trying to figure out, what does God gain from it? So there's a third, yeah?
God gains nachas from it.
Nachas. Does God need nachas? No.
It's not about need. God doesn't need anything.
He wants.
He gets.
Okay. There's very good. There's another philosophy on page 45, text 7. It's called relationships. This is a very interesting philosophy. It's based on King David, and a little mystical. And this is, someone mentioned it before, that the reason we do mitzvahs is not only because of reward or punishment or being a better person, but it gives us the opportunity to have a relationship with God. And the opportunity to have a relationship with God far outweighs the reward and punishment and the gain. For me, it's more important that I have a relationship with God than the outcome that I'm going to gain from it. And you see it a lot of times in life. You know, let's take a spouse. If you ask a spouse, what do they want from their other spouse? They don't want reward. They don't want punishment. They just want a relationship that I feel is a connection. You know what I'm trying to say? It's not, I don't need the jewelry. I don't feel we're connected. It's like we're two worlds. You do your thing, I do my thing, and somehow by dinner we meet, you know, we have like a dinner, you know, you go out for dinner, the husband might go out for dinner, and then they send a text instead of talking to each other because they don't know how to communicate. But the best thing that a person could have is a good relationship with someone else. Mitzvos and Torah gives us the opportunity to have a relation with God. So if you look in King David, on text 7, look what he says, say,
as the deer longs for streams of water, so I long for you, O God. I thirst for God, the living God. When will I come and appear in God's presence?
That's what King David said. And if you look in text 8, you see the story of a 13-year-old. A 13-year-old child. What did he want? I just wanted a relationship. Having a relationship surpasses everything else. I want a relationship with God. So God says, you want a relationship with me? Here, do the mitzvahs, you'll have a relationship with me. That's how you relate. That's how we connect. And that's why in Hebrew, how do you say mitzvah? You don't say command. Mitzvah is not a command. Mitzvah is a connection. As in Hebrew, mitzvah means tzavsav echibur. We're having a relationship with God. Let's read text 8, a very touching story, yeah?
13-year-old golfer Ethan Couch wished in the hospital 2 years ago to go to the Masters. After his parents noticed that Couch was suffering from strange symptoms, tests revealed that he had tectal glioma, and there was a benign but inoperable tumor in his brain. On Wednesday, Couch's wish will come true. Kevin Streelman, whose daughter spent time in intensive care after being born, decided that he wanted to make a difference in a child's life and gave them a trip to Augusta National. After contacting the Make-A-Wish Foundation, Streelman was put in touch with Couch, who will serve as his caddy at the Masters Par 3 contest via ESPN. Streelman introduced himself to Ethan and explained that as a Masters competitor, he was allowed to choose his caddy for Wednesday's event. He was choosing Ethan. The boy fell silent. His parents, each listening over a speakerphone, began crying. When Ethan finally spoke, his voice was shaking. I just wanted to go to the masters, he'd later say. I didn't expect this.
Got it? The relationship? Huh? So he wanted to have an opportunity for what? What did he want to do in his life?
Go to the masters.
Go to the masters, like the... So he had an opportunity. That was his main thing. I'll give you a good illustration because I see a lot of Jews have it. It's called DOG. What's DOG?
Dog.
A dog. Anyone have a dog?
Two.
When anyone
dog?
The
dog, I want you to know. That's a mitzvah.
Oh, that's a mitzvah, you see? She's doing mitzvahs.
My daughter is.
Anyone want to do more mitzvahs? I'll send you a few dogs. You'll have so many mitzvahs. If you go out, you take a walk with a dog, and you say to the dog, listen, I want to teach you how to make chalent, and you speak to the dog. The dog doesn't know what you're talking about. So what do? You want to have a relationship with the dog. So you take a ball, like a little tennis ball, and you throw it up in the air. And the dog runs, gets it, and brings it to you. What happened now?
Relationship.
There was a relationship. All of a sudden you feel like there's a connection. Now the dog maybe doesn't understand half the things you say, half the things you do, has no understanding, but all of a sudden, by throwing that ball and playing, you know, all of a sudden there was a connection, and now you and the dog, there's a relationship. This, look at, and I don't want to say that you guys are the DOGs, but look at yourself, that you are just a nobody, but God wants you to have a relationship with Him. He wants you to have the opportunity, so He throws you tennis balls. What is the tennis balls? Light candles, put on tefillin, keep kosher. I'm just kidding. He throws it to you, you run, you catch it, he says, now you have a relationship with God. You get what I'm saying? So it's not really so much what you're doing. This is the key here. That's why I'm giving you an example of a tennis ball. It's the connection that you're gaining from it. You see, up till now, we have three philosophies. Reward and punishment. Right? Mm-hmm. The second philosophy was it makes you a good mensch, right? Because Torah mitzvahs is a good mensch. And then the third philosophy is a relationship. The good thing about this is it doesn't matter what it is. If it's thrown from the owner, which is God, whatever He throws to you, whether it's, you know, fish on Shabbos or sitting in a sukkah on sukkahs, whatever tennis balls He throws to you, whatever it is, that creates a relationship, whether it makes you a better person or doesn't make you a better person, it's the relationship that you create. So from this perspective, the reason you're doing a mitzvah is to have a relationship with God. But still, it doesn't answer the first question, is why does God need it? Does God need our relationship? Does God gain anything from being us relating to Him? Does it give God anything by having us have a relationship with God? Does God gain anything from having a relationship that we have with Him? So look in text 10, and then we'll go to the final vision of why we should do the right thing. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Let's say we don't want to keep kosher, and we don't want to light candles. Can we still have a relationship with God?
Yes. So you do. There is other things. There's six. Oh, yes. Look in text 10, he answers that question. Read text 10, go.
The Talmud teaches in Kiddushim that one who does a single mitzvah and refrains from sin merits the world to come. If so, why did God give us 613 mitzvot? Would it not have been sufficient for Him to admonish us against injustice? Thus Rabbi Hananiah ben Akashia taught, God wished to make Israel meritorious. He therefore gave them an abundance of Torah and mitzvot. God gave us the Torah and mitzvot in abundant measure to increase our merit. Also, the abundance of commandments guarantees that we will always have the opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah. This would not have been so if we had few mitzvot.
So to answer your question, God said, you know, I know some people don't want to have kosher. They don't want to keep Shabbos. They don't want to light candles. So I'm going to give you a lot of mitzvahs. And you're at least one of them you're going to do. So you'll have some relationship with me. So you will have, what is it called? There's always an opportunity. Tzedakah. No, what else? You pick.
Visiting
the sick. Having guests at home. Comforting a shiva. You know, comforting the mourners. Going to a wedding, making the bride happy. The groom also should be happy. You know, all those things. I mean, you want the groom also to be happy, at least for the
first. Guests at home is a mitzvah?
Yeah.
Of
yeah, it's one of the mitzvahs.
It's one of the first mitzvahs.
It's called, yeah. Strange, like people that are not related to you and you're inviting them to your house and you're giving them to eat. And Sachnosas Orchim. Abraham mitzvah. So you get, yeah, no, 100%. I just want to say, so the reason God gave us a lot is so we each one could at least have some relationship. Now, if you want to have more of a relationship, you have more opportunities. You want to have less, but there's always something, there's a relationship that you could have, according to this, yeah.
But are there different qualities? I mean, certain mitzvahs, are they worth more than other mitzvahs? I mean, you know, does it...
You mean the relationship?
In terms of a relationship, like somebody who doesn't keep kosher, but does other things.
Like tzedakah, let's say.
Right, tzedakah and other things.
It's the funny, the problem is we don't know how to measure it. You know, we don't have a measuring. The only thing I could tell you that I know it says in Torah, don't measure the mitzvah because we can't know what's more important or what's less. But the true way to measure is how much did you have to sacrifice of yourself to do that mitzvah? I'll give you an example. There's someone that gave $1 to tzedakah, and there's someone that gave $100. The person that gave the dollar had to give a lot to give that dollar because they only had $10 to the name. So for them to give that dollar, they had to sacrifice a lot. And then the guy that gave $100, it didn't mean so much. I mean, it's a mitzvah, but it didn't mean so much because they have more than $100. God wants to see, also a relationship. If you want a relationship with someone, it's how much did you put into this? How much did you have to give up of yourself, or how much did you give in it to give this relationship? So it's hard to measure mitzvahs, because sometimes a thing that you think is small, God thinks it's big. Sometimes you think it's big, God thinks it's small. So we just say, okay, if we have an opportunity to do a mitzvah, let's try and do it. And if I have another opportunity, let's try and do it. What's your question?
I just wanted to share something with you. I have a 17-year-old grandson, and he decided to change all the bulbs in the house.
To LED, right?
Well, whatever it was. In my house. So I had some, and then while he was playing ball or whatever, I went out and I bought a whole bunch of them. And I said to him, you're going to be an electrical engineer. He says, no, I want to be an electrician. They make more money. So he went through the whole house, and I told him what a wonderful thing he did. And this is a difficult kid. This is a kid that's not easy. I adore him. But he was so thrilled with what he accomplished. So that was my mitzvah, that I really made him feel that he had worth. You know? It was a very interesting thing.
That he felt he accomplished something.
Right.
He was worth
results.
It. Okay.
You said results.
The last and final, and we're going to conclude with this, is I'm going to now end off not the first philosophy of reward and punishment, not the second philosophy of being a better person, and not the third philosophy of having a relationship, but there's something far more, which is that every mitzvah I do and everything I learn in Torah gives God the vision of why God created the world to begin with. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example with electricity. You ready with electricity?
Yeah.
In order, I'm not joking about this. In order, I'm by the way, I'm an engineer also. You know, I'm not sure. The electricity, if you want to get electric from that circuit to the light, or you want from this to there, how do you get the current, you know, to travel? If you're going to put paper, it doesn't travel through
right.
paper.
No, it's not a conductor.
You know, it doesn't carry the energy of electricity. So what do they usually use? Copper. You know, copper is a good conductor to let the energy go through and connect to the next location you want it to be. You know, that's why the wires are made from some kind of copper or some kind of metal. You know, usually copper is a pretty good for this. God, I just want you to understand, why did God create the world to begin with? Why did he need it? Honestly. It really, if you think about it, it's almost like God was great without it.
He didn't need
the whole thing. But it says that, you know why he did it? For he had this desire. That's what the Torah says. He had the desire. I want to create a world where I can feel comfortable to live in this world. But how am I going to get to be in this world? I'm going to create people, humans, and I'm going to give them the ability to create copper wires. And every time they create a copper wire, you bring my energy into this world. And the more copper wires we have, the more of God's energy is in this world. And the ultimate purpose God wants is the whole world should be filled with God. So every mitzvah I do is another wire. Every good word I say is another wire. And a copper wire. It's a good conduit to transmit the infinite energy of God into this physical world. Now again, why God wanted it, it's called the desire of God. In Hebrew, it's nes'aveh. God had this desire, I want to create a physical world, a materialistic world that has no godliness in it, and I'm going to create the humans, Jews and the human beings, everyone, and I'm going to give each one different opportunities to bring wires, connect me here. And every mitzvah you do, you're connecting me here to this world. So you are accomplishing the greatest thing that God wants. Human beings and Jewish human beings. What's the difference? The human beings have, it's called the seven Noach mitzvahs that they have to do. And then there's the Jewish, which do the 613. But everyone has a mission, what they have to accomplish. And it was created with that purpose. In other words, like this. If you really think about it, God doesn't need the whole thing. You don't gain anything, you don't give him anything. But God decided that he wants a world that should be a physical, material world, and then he wants us to connect him to this world and bring him down here. How? He gave us all these mitzvahs to bring him down to this earth. So according to this philosophy, which is the ultimate philosophy, every time you do a mitzvah, you are accomplishing why God created the world to begin with, and what's the purpose of this whole creation. So every mitzvah not only connects you to God, not only makes you a good mensch, not only gives you a reward, but it gives you the ultimate purpose of creation, that you're bringing God down to this world by every mitzvah you do. Read it in text 11, the last text.
When we perform a mitzvah, we infuse this physical world with the infinite light of the divine. This is our entire purpose and the reason we were created, to transform the darkness of this lowly world into light, that God's glory should fill the entire physical world.
That is the truth of the whole creation. Now goes the last thing that people always say, well, Rabbi, I'm not doing anything. It's all or nothing. Never heard anyone say?
Mm-hmm.
You know me, for me, it's nothing. Why should I do one and not the other? I'm a hypocrite if I do one, not the other. But the truth is, it's not true. Because every good deed you do, you're creating a conduit of electric, you know, wire, copper wire, that you're bringing this energy of God to this world. So even if you do one mitzvah, you created one connection and you brought God into one aspect. As they know, there's a famous mathematical thing, 0 + 0 = 0. So even if you think that if you do one, it's nothing, it's not true. Because in order for 100 to be something, the one had to also be something. It can't be that one is zero. Because in order for 100 to be 100, the one had to be one. So even one is a whole connection. Even one, you're creating a whole circuit. Even one, you're creating a whole line of electricity. You know, the infinite God. Because every mitzvah is a mitzvah on its own. It's like someone says, well, you know, I don't want to cross the old lady the street because I'm a thief. You're a thief? That's okay, you're a thief. But therefore, crossing the street, the old lady's street, is not a mitzvah. The fact that you're a ganav doesn't mean you can't cross the street the lady. So like you said, the fact if someone doesn't eat kosher, it could still give tzedakah and create a whole electricity for God to bring the infinite God into this world. That was the whole reason it was created. The fact that I don't light candles, well, I could now go help visit the sick. When I visit the sick, I create a new conduit of God, and I bring God into this world, and now the infinite God is right here in this physical world. Oh, the fact that I didn't eat kosher yesterday doesn't mean that if I eat kosher today, I'm not bringing this conduit of God into this world. Yes, I'm bringing him into this piece of meat and to this piece of chicken, because today I decided for one day to eat kosher. You know what I'm saying? It's not like if I didn't eat kosher yesterday means I shouldn't eat today. No. Today it's another energy that you could bring. And every day God gives you different opportunities, the different energies that you could create. Like someone once wrote to the Rebbe, he says, all the guests that are coming to my bar mitzvah, I know they don't eat kosher. They're Jewish. But they don't eat kosher. So why should I make a kosher event and then pay another few thousand dollars, whatever? So the Rebbe said an interesting answer. He said, if you would realize, it was a mind-boggling answer, if you would realize how one less time eating non-kosher, one less time eating non-kosher, how infinite energy of God you bring to this world, you wouldn't ask the question. Well, they ate kosher, not kosher yesterday, and they're not eating tomorrow. What does that have to do? Today is a new creation. Today is a new energy. Today's energy that you can bring to the world, you couldn't do it yesterday and you can't do it tomorrow. So every day is a whole different creation. It's a whole different energy that you bring. So the fact that yesterday, it's like someone said, I didn't do tefillin yesterday, so I'm not allowed to do it today. I didn't give tzedakah yesterday. No. Yesterday was a different day. It was a different creation. Today is a new creation. So today I gave tzedakah. Maybe tomorrow I won't, but today I did.
So when you use the term a good Jew, where does that fall into this whole discussion? If they do certain mitzvahs, not certain mitzvahs, how, you know, where does that all come together?
It depends who you ask. No, I'll tell you what I mean. If I want to say about someone, he's a good Jew. So for some people, what does a good Jew mean? He's a nice person. He's charitable. He's kind. He's giving, he's loving, whatever. Okay, for me, you don't have to be a good Jew to be. You could be a good Gentile. Because a Gentile is also kind, loving, giving, sharing, good. I mean, a good portion of them. So, what makes you Jewish special good? You know what I mean? That's Gentile good. You're gentle, and you're a Gentile. So, it happens to be you're Jewish also. Then there is another way of good. You know, this guy is a good Jew. Every time I see him, he's always going to shul. I'm just talking different kind of good. He's always before he eats, he always makes a blessing. In the morning, he's always washing his hand. He must be a good Jew. But not, you can't always measure it like that, because maybe he does that, but maybe he's stealing from someone. It's hard. It's such a... So the way I look at a good Jew is like this. I take them by the moment. And I say, okay, right now, you're a great Jew. He says, what do you mean? Because you just studied for an hour and a half. You didn't speak any gossip for this last hour and a half. You didn't say any lies for the last hour and a half. You didn't watch any stupid cartoons. and you did everything. So you guys are such good people. So for this hour and a half, you just created a conduit of God, which is electricity, that you brought the infinite God into this world in this hour and a half. So you are so good now. Because it's very hard to measure, because like, you can have a guy that's so kosher and praying and then stealing the bank. You can have a guy that's good business and praying but beating his spouse. You can have a guy that does everything but he's such a stingy. I mean,
I think it's more self-judgment, not something that's
right. It's how
you judge other people judge you. It's just how you judge yourself.
I personally think Yossi, I think is a good Jew. Why do I think he's good? Because he's very honest. He tells you as it is. He's not going to tell you I'm good. He tells you the truth, the way he feels. Okay, but some people will say, well, he's good in that, but there's something that he's not good in. Okay, I don't know. It's hard to measure these things. But in general, if you look at the Torah, in general, there's two parts to make you good. There is the first of the Ten Commandments, and there's the second half. The first is the way you behave between humans, and the second is the way you behave between you and God. So to make it a complete good package, you do both halves. If you want to do one half, so you're half good. You're half good in all half good. But you're good in that whole half. So you're all good in that half. But the other half, you're not good in that whole half. You get what I'm trying to say? It's not like I'm a half a good Jew. I'm a good in the whole half. You get the difference what I'm saying? No, but you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
I'm good in the whole half. It's not I'm a half good. I'm good in that whole half. But am I good in both halves? That's hard already. And then you have people that are good in this half, between them and God, but not necessarily so good in between them and others. So we have to work on both. It's the balance of both. Try this. But according to the Rambam, that we learned, it makes you a better person. Remember we said, like, if you discipline yourself, if you follow Torah mitzvahs, it makes you a better personality. So maybe a person, in order to be a better mensch, maybe you have to do more mitzvahs. You know, like someone once said, there's three things that make you crazy. You ever heard this? So yeah, there's three things that make you meshuga. One is if you have a lot of wealth, too much wealth, it makes people crazy. Like the guy that won the $2 billion, he's crazy. I'm sure already by now. Then the second thing it says, if you drink liquor, it can make you crazy. And the third thing is if you learn a lot of Torah. So someone came over to the Rebbe, says, I met a rich guy, and he wasn't crazy. So the Rebbe said, well, that means he's not rich enough. Make sure when he becomes more rich, he'll become... Then you said, well, I met a guy that drank a bottle of vodka and he's still normal. It means he has to drink another two bottles to become. And then I meet people that learn Torah and they're still not mashug. It means they didn't learn enough. They have to keep learning. So there's never enough in these things. You know what I'm saying? You have to do it till you become mashug. Till you become crazy. When you're crazy, you're not on the right path. I want to end off with what happened this week. So I just want to say something we could do practically. When the soul leaves the body, so what happens is the soul is in heaven. And especially, the Torah says these Jews were killed because they were Jewish. That's the highest level of heaven you could get to. Because anyone that's killed for being a Jew is called Kedoshim. That's what the Torah says. They are martyrs, and then the highest level of sanctity there could be. However, we could help them go even higher. They can't anymore because they reached their maximum. They're not more anymore in this world. So every mitzvah we do, or every good deed we do, and we say we're doing it in memory of them, we are actually giving them the ability to get even higher. That's what the Torah says. So for example, if you give tzedakah, and you say, you know, I'm giving tzedakah in memory of them. You know what? I'm going to learn Torah in memory of them. I'm going to eat, whatever it is, you are actually helping them physically in their spiritual world to go higher and higher. That's what the Torah said. So the first thing is that you should know that these 11 Jews are the highest level. They're like martyrs. Because they were killed for one thing, Jewish. That's like, whoa, it's the highest, like the Nazis did, you know, Jewish. All the 6 million are martyrs. Number two, we could add in good, in positive, because the way to fight darkness is with light. The way to fight hate is with love. So by adding in loving one another in light, it brings you to a whole different level. So, suggestions, I could give you suggestions. This Friday, if you don't light candles Friday on time, or if you do, try to get someone else and say, you know what, for this Friday, let's do it in memory of the 11 martyrs. Light candles this Friday on time. Tell your friends or someone that you know they're not lighting. Every girl from the age of 3 should light candles. So candles will bring light. And say, I'm doing it in memory. It's a mitzvah of Hashem. So I'm bringing God into this world and a memory of them. And maybe what will happen is that the next Friday you'll also light candles, which could be a great mistake. But maybe that could also happen. And then you could continue to bring the light for good. Number two, it's time to be together, not only when there's a tragedy. Why is it that, you know, the famous rabbi said, when Hitler killed the Jews and when this guy killed the Jews, he didn't say, I want to kill conservative Jews or Reform Jews or Orthodox Jews or Hasidic Jews or Israeli Jews or Ashkenazic. So he said, I want to kill Jews. So if we die together, why can't we live together? You get what I'm saying? So why do we have to, only when it comes to tragic, we're together? So a lot of times we do things in Chabad to bring people together. I'm just giving an example. Next Friday night we have a communal dinner. What's the purpose? Of course you have a nice dinner and it's Shabbos and it's holy but it's bringing people together. You know, sometimes we lose focus. I don't have time. So what? You know, God forbid someone passes away. For Shiva, we always have time. Why can't we have time for happy things? You know what I'm saying? Like, why? So I'm just giving you different examples, but a practical thing is that this Friday, if you can light candles, and before you light candles, give tzedakah in a charity box, or a few coins, or a few dollars, just put it in and say, I'm doing it in memory. Get someone else that could. Try to come to shul on Shabbos when they were out in shul Shabbos. And the last thing is mezuzahs. Mezuzahs, the Torah says, having mezuzahs on every door protects you. On the three letters on the outside of the mezuzah, it says Shin Dalad Yud, which is Shomer Dal Sus Yisrael. God protects the Jewish homes. So if you didn't check your mezuzahs in the last 6-7 years, check them. Give it to a check. We could help you with that. If you're missing any mezuzahs, you know anyone that needs mezuzahs, it's an opportunity to put mezuzahs in every Jewish home, so that adds in protection of the whole world. So I guess the terrorist doesn't even get inside. As the famous Psalm in King David, it says, if God doesn't protect the city, then the guards is a waste of time. Of course we have to have guards, don't get me wrong. But if you don't have God guarding the guards, then the guards are a waste of time. You know what I'm saying? You need God also in this picture. And He is in the whole picture. So may God bless the 11 souls. May us bring light. May us bring positive. May us come together to always learn, to do things together. Let's be together. We're just Jewish. Let's just be Jews. Don't make the whole Baba Mises. We're Jewish people. Let's do it. L'chaim. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you. I contacted everyone.
You gave everyone?